Yashoda Nandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivardhari Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivardhari Yashoda Nandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Vrajajana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jayam Vishnu Pad Paramahansa Puri Vrajakacharja Ashtotara Shatashrishi Mad, His Divine Grace, Iskan Founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada Ki, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki, Gaura Premanandi. Sati Devi Gauravani Pachar, Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschata Deshatarne. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Everyone credits me with being a shrutidhar and has therefore not supplied a Srimad Bhagavatam. Is there a Bhagavatam in the house? It is a nice compliment, and perhaps by your blessings I will attain that status of shrutidhar. Dhar means to hold, like giridhari. Dhar means to hold, and shruti means sound. In previous ages, the Brahmins had memorized the entire shastras. Therefore, books were not required. Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th canon, chapter 10, text. Three. Thank you very much. Because of a prose Sanskrit, we will skip the Sanskrit, following the footsteps of the last few speakers. Translation. When the palanquin carriers heard the threatening words of Maharaj Rahugana, they became very afraid of his punishment and began to speak to him as follows. Purport. According to political science, the king sometimes tries to pacify his subordinates, sometimes chastises them, sometimes derides them, and sometimes rewards them. In this way, the king rules his subordinates. The bearers of the palanquin could understand that the king was angry and that he would chastise them. Do you know what a palanquin is? Can you tell me what a palanquin is? It's two poles with a kind of a house-like deal on it, and four men carry it. Four men. Yeah, the king is being carried by four men. There are two long poles, say 10 feet long, with a little house-like device on top. So the king is sitting there, and there are four places for four men to carry. Text 4. O Lord, please note that we are not at all negligent in discharging our duties. The other three palanquin carriers were quite much afraid of being chastised because they were not paramahansas. Jadavarat, the fourth palanquin carrier, was not afraid of chastisement because he did not identify with his body at all. But the other three were in terrible anxiety. O Lord, please note that we are not at all negligent in discharging our duties. We have been faithfully carrying this palanquin according to your desire. But this man who has been recently engaged to work with us cannot walk very swiftly. Therefore, we are not able to carry the palanquin with him. Therefore, the other palanquin carriers were Shudras, whereas Jadavarat was not only a high-caste Brahmin, but also a great devotee. Shudras do not sympathize with other living beings, but a Vaishnav cannot act like a Shudra. Whenever a Shudra and a Brahmin Vaishnav are combined, there will certainly be imbalance in the execution of duties. The Shudras were walking with the palanquin without at all caring for the ants on the ground. But Jadavarat could not act like a Shudra, and therefore difficulty arose. Text 5. King Rahugana could understand that the speeches given by the carriers who were afraid of being punished. He could also understand that simply due to the fault of one person, the palanquin was not being carried properly. Knowing this perfectly well and hearing their appeal, he became a little angry, although he was very advanced in political science and was very experienced. His anger rose due to his inborn nature as a king. Actually, King Rahugana's mind was covered by the mode of passion, and he therefore spoke as follows to Jadavarat, whose Brahmin effulgence was not clearly visible, being covered like a fire covered by ashes. Purport. The distinction between Rajagun and Sattvagun is explained in this verse. Although the king was very upright and advanced in political science and governmental management, he was nonetheless in the mode of passion, and therefore, due to a slight agitation, he became angry. Jadavarat, despite all kinds of injustice endured because of his deaf and dumb display, remained silent by the strength of his spiritual advancement. Nonetheless, his Brahma Teja, his Brahman effulgence, was indistinctly visible in his person. Indistinctly visible. Text 6. King Rahugana told Jadabharat, "How troublesome this is, my dear brother. You certainly appear very fatigued because you have been carrying this palanquin alone without assistance for a long time and for a long distance. Besides that, due to your old age, you have become greatly troubled. My dear friend, I see that you are not very firm nor very strong and stout. Aren't your fellow carriers cooperating with you?" In this way, the king criticized Jadabharat with sarcastic words. Yet despite being criticized in this way, Jadabharat had no bodily conception of the situation. He knew that he was not the body, for he had attained his spiritual identity. He was neither fat, lean, nor thin, nor had he anything to do with a lump of matter, a combination of the five gross and three subtle elements. He had nothing to do with the material body and its two hands and legs. In other words, he had completely realized his spiritual identity, Aham Brahmasmi. He was therefore unaffected by this sarcastic criticism from the king. Without saying anything, he continued carrying the palanquin as before. Despite the king's criticism, he just continued carrying it because he considered the higher priority not harming the ants. Being a Mahabhagavat or Uttama Adhikari, he considered the higher priority not harming other living entities, instead of satisfying the whims of this king. Purport, Jadabharat was completely liberated. He did not even care when the dacoits attempted to kill his body. He knew that he certainly was not the body. Even if the body were killed, he would not have cared, for he was thoroughly convinced of the proposition found in Bhagavad Gita 2:20, Nahanyate Hanyamane Sharire. He knew that he could not be killed, even if his body were killed. Although he did not protest, the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his agent could not tolerate the injustice of the dacoits. Therefore, he was saved by the mercy of Krishna, and the dacoits were killed. In this case, while carrying the palanquin, he also knew that he was not the body. This body was very strong and stout, in sound condition, and quite competent to carry the palanquin. Due to his being freed from the bodily conception, the sarcastic words of the king did not at all affect him. The body is created according to one's karma, and material nature supplies the ingredients for the development of a certain type of body. The soul the body covers is different from the bodily construction. Therefore, anything favorable or mischievous done to the body does not affect a spirit soul. The Vedic injunction is asango yayam purushaha. The spirit soul is always unaffected by material arrangements. Om Agyanatimirandasya Gyananjalashalakaya Chakshun Militanena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. So this is one of the fundamental postulates of transcendental science, that we are entirely non-physical beings. The only connection is our desire to enjoy. That's the actual only connection. We have a very strong desire to enjoy. So the desire to enjoy has to be cut down by the weapon of Shravanam Kirtanam, hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. Shrinvatasvakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Vidantostohya Badrani Vidunoti Suritsatam. This is 1:2:17, Srimad Bhagavatam. First canto, chapter 2, text 17. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is situated in the core of everyone's heart, cleanses desire for material enjoyment from the heart of one who eagerly hears his messages. Shrinvata sva kata Krishna, Krishna kata. This is the life and soul of the Vaishnavas, Krishna kata. Simply by hearing the glories of Krishna and his pure devotees, we are cleaning our hearts. Or actually, the Lord seated in the heart, according to this verse I just cited, the Lord seated in the heart, who is actually your friend, he's rooting for you. Come on, you can do it, just a little more. like a marathon. You're running a marathon. Just go a little more. You're almost there. Don't give up. Krishna's on your side. He's in your heart. He's trying to help you. You have as your ally the Supreme Personality of Godhead, a person with unlimited power. Who could want a greater friend, a greater ally? Suhridam sarvabhutanam. Suhrid, good-hearted. He's the Suhrid, the real, true friend of all living entities. Who could want a more... You cannot want someone more powerful or more friendly than Krishna. And he's there to help you. In the enterprise of self-realization, you have the best ally. So therefore, success is guaranteed if we follow the program that Krishna has given. That's the key point. We have to follow the program that Krishna has given. And then the hearing and chanting process is extremely potent. And during the course of our service, we have a way to actually transcend the body. At present, most of us identify with our body very strongly. But by pushing yourself beyond your comfort zone, then you actually come to realize that you're not the body. Just like we've given the example of these glorious book distributors. The book distributors are doing the greatest service for Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada's greatest desire is that his books be distributed. So these glorious distributors on the Warped Tour, they go in the blazing hot sun. In Phoenix, Arizona, last year was 110 degrees. That's the standard temperature. It's like Vrindavan in the summer. 40 degrees, 45 degrees centigrade, or 110, 115 degrees Fahrenheit. And they work all day in the hot sun. And while that's going on, there's pounding rock and roll music of the lowest caliber, punk rock, which sounds like the grinding of machines. And it's amplified to the max. It's like torture. It's like a torture session. If you had to choose like a kind of Chinese torture to undergo, even if I could devise a more severe torture, I don't know if it would be more severe than that. In 110-degree weather, distributing books while hearing that horrendous sound vibration. And if you can tolerate it, see, I failed. I only lasted 2 years. I'm an example of a failure case. But if you actually tolerate and transcend, then you realize you're not the body. They just keep going on and on. The first hour, you feel like you're going to die. And if you can get through that, then you actually, you have to come. You're forced. The nature of the service forces you to come above the bodily platform. Because if you're calculating in terms of what's good for the body, you won't do the activity, that's all. What's pleasing to the body and mind, you will not do the activity. In the first canto, there's a beautiful purport where Prabhupada says, self-realization means becoming serious about the interests of the soul and neglectful of the interests of the mind and body. There's a beautiful purport in the first canto where Prabhupada says, self-realization means becoming serious about the activities of the soul. How are you ever going to realize we're a soul? We say that we're a soul, but we function as though we're a body and mind. That's our practical functional situation. So if you want to switch your paradigm, you have to push yourself out of your comfort zone. This has to be done carefully. Prabhupada also said dovetailing. Initially, the neophyte dovetails. He does things which are convenient or comfortable for his mind and body, because that's your neophyte. That's how you start out the process. But along the way, you can push yourself a little bit and see how nice it tastes. The taste of selfless surrender. There's a special taste that comes in selfless surrender. Indeed, that's the whole goal of Bhagavad Gita. What is the conclusion? Sarva dharman prityaja. Mam ekam. Ekam means one or exclusive. Exclusive surrender to the personality of Godhead. That's the actual goal. That was exhibited by the residents of Vrindavan Dham. Whatever Krishna wanted. When Krishna told Nanda Maharaj, this Indra Yagya is a waste of time. Nanda was actually considering that if we don't do this, Indra is going to punish us severely. So he debated with Krishna a little bit back and forth. But ultimately, because Nanda Maharaj is a spotlessly pure devotee of the highest caliber, his only interest ultimately was simply to please Krishna. So at risk of tremendous, and we saw the kind of penalties that they experienced for going against Indra's desire, at risk of terrible retribution, they took Krishna's advice to worship Govardhan Hill instead. And the gopis will commit social suicide, leaving in the middle of night. That's equivalent to social suicide for a young girl in a respectable situation. 5,000 years ago, the Vedic culture was very strongly in place. But the gopis didn't even hesitate in the slightest. As soon as Krishna played upon his akarshana venu, akarshana means all attractive, he plays upon his venu, then they were just out of the house. It was just no matter what else they were doing. Somewhere feeding their babies. They just put the baby down, out of the house. It's in the Krishna book, chapter 29. Or they were feeding the husbands. They just dropped the plate, ran out the door. Some were eating themselves. Of course, they had no interest in personal sense gratification. They simply came in the dead of night into the forest, completely against Vedic culture. Completely against. You couldn't do something more against. And when they got out there, what did Krishna say? Sorry, go back home. We don't need you. Krishna had to test their intensity. Actually, Krishna knew very well their exalted status. He wanted to show the rest of the universe how exalted they were. So Krishna first, when they came out, Krishna said, oh, what brings you out here on such a beautiful night? Maybe you've come to see the beautiful forest and the wonderful panoramic scene of Shri Vrindavan Dham and the full moonlight. Now that you've satisfied your desire to see the beauty of Vrindavan Forest, I recommend you go back home. They're thinking, what is this? What is this? You called us. You know very well why we've come here. This is ludicrous. You called us specifically with all attractive flute that mesmerizes and enchants our hearts. Now that our hearts have been enchanted by you, we can't go anywhere else. We have no power to move. Krishna said, well, there are many dangerous animals. Wolves and tigers and bears are loitering to find their prey, is how Prabhupada says it in the Krishna book, loitering to find their prey. And you're just young and delicate, fragile gopis. How will you protect yourself in this terrible forest? Better you go back home. And also, this is a violation of Vedic Dharma. This is completely unacceptable. And you know that we are very strict followers of Dharma, Krishna said. At first they were laughing because it was so ludicrous, but then after Krishna persisted in these kinds of statements, they became very much afraid. Because for a pure devotee, their life and soul is their seva. They can't exist without their seva. They'd rather die. Dying is nothing. That's insignificant. But losing my service, that is unspeakably disturbing to my conscience. I can't even consider. Can't even contemplate not performing my service for Krishna. Their service was to satisfy the transcendental senses of Lord Krishna. So Krishna kept saying these things, and they. Ultimately, then they began crying. They were thinking, I'm going to lose my service. Just like Rukmini also. She's the first queen of Krishna and Dvarka. So Krishna, one time he said completely crazy things. He said, I was afraid of Shishupal and Dantavakra and Jarasandha. That's why I had to build a fort out in the sea, because I'm afraid of all these heroic... I'm a coward. Not a cowherd, but a coward. I'm afraid. I'm useless. You're so qualified, you shouldn't have me as a husband. You should select someone else like Shishupal. He's a great king. Krishna started saying utterly bizarre and crazy things. Krishna said, I'm not interested in family life. I'm interested in self-realization. So Rukmini, she took it totally serious the whole time. She fainted. She just lost consciousness. Completely. I'm losing my service. I don't know what I did. Somehow I'm losing my service to Krishna. Krishna's going to reject me. And actually, then after saying a bunch of really crazy things, then Krishna said, actually, I have no love for you at all. The only reason I kidnapped you is to teach these puffed up princes a lesson. And then that was intolerable when he said he had no love for her. Actually, he had great love for her. She's a pure devotee in Sakya Madhurya Ras. The great Vaishnav Acharyas inform us that the Madhurya Ras has two subdivisions, Parakya and Svakya. Parakya is the unmarried, unwedded love where Krishna dances with his girlfriends, the gopis. That's called Parakya. And Svakya is where Krishna is formally married to his wives in Dvarka, headed by Satyabhama and Rukmini. And actually, something very interesting is these gopis, Rukmini, Satyabhama, and the other queens of Krishna in Dvarka, they're actually expansions of the gopis of Raj. The gopis of Raj are so dear, even when Krishna had to leave his Vrindavan Dham, he actually took his gopis with him in different disguised forms, expansions. In fact, all of the gopis and all of the queens in Dvarka and all of the Lakshis in Vaikuntha, these are all expansions of the transcendental form of Srimati Radharani, who is the personification of Ladini Shakti. Therefore, she controls Krishna. She's so powerful. She's so attractive. She's called Madan Mohan Mohini. Krishna's Madan Mohan, he attracts everyone's mind away from Madan or Cupid, the god of sex. Everyone is conquered by sex in the material world. But when you come attached to Krishna, you actually can transcend sex desire on the power of the attraction. The strength of your attraction to Krishna, you transcend sex desire. So Krishna is called Madan Mohan. Madan is Cupid. And Krishna is Madan Mohan. Moha means to enchant or to bewilder. So Krishna actually is so attractive, the serious devotees of Krishna can give up that which conquers everyone else, material lust and greed, enslaves everyone in this world. When Maya Devi came to Haridas Thakur, she said, "Your mind alone have I failed to attract. Everyone else I conquer easily." Haridas Thakur was so glorious a Vaishnav that he conquered not only the attraction of a mundane prostitute with a material body, but when Maya herself came. There are two separate incidences recorded in Anchalila, chapter 3 of Chaitanya Charitamrita, that Haridas Thakur was first tempted by a mundane prostitute sent by a person named Ramchandra Khan, who was envious of Vaishnavas. This Ramchandra Khan was a great atheist and was envious of Vaishnavas. So when Haridas Thakur was performing his Nam Yajna, his 300,000 holy names, that's 192 rounds a day. If you chant 19 rounds one day, that's one-tenth of what Haridas Thakur chants. He chanted 192 rounds a day, and he was not looking at his watch every 5 minutes, hoping it would end as soon as possible. For him, the holy name is everything. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says there's nothing to be had in the 14 worlds but the holy name of Lord Hari. Because if you chant without offense, that holy name is infinitely attractive. That holy name is non-different from Radha and Krishna. The Hare Krishna Maha Mantra contains Radha and Krishna. It's non-different from Radha and Krishna. It's like a window into the spiritual world. Every Hare Krishna and Ram propels you to a more intimate association with Radha and Krishna. So how can you be bored if you're actually chanting purely with a pure heart? You're seeing the pastimes. You're actually entering into the pastimes of the Lord. A devotee on the highest stage, simply when he sits down to chant or meditate on Radha and Krishna, enters into those pastimes. And he can even bring tangible evidence from the pastimes back into mundane reality. I told the story of Srinivasacharya, who received a garland, who was worshipping Lord Chaitanya in meditation, and he put a beautiful garland on Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya was pleased with his ecstatic love. So Lord Chaitanya took the garland off at the end of the artik and put the garland on Srinivasacharya. This was conducted entirely in his meditation, manasa seva, seva performed within the mind. A very advanced Vaishnav can perform seva within his mind. So this artik that Srinivas Acharya offered to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was conducted entirely within his mind, but when he came back to external mundane reality, he was wearing that very same garland that Lord Chaitanya had given him at the conclusion of the artik performance. So the pure devotee, it's not theoretical, he actually enters into the pastimes. He's part of the pastimes. Another way to look at it is, these pure devotees are coming from the camp of Radha and Krishna, so they're really from the pastimes, and they just come here as sannyasis. The manjaris, like Raghunath Das Goswami is a manjari, or Rupa Goswami is Rupa Manjari. So the manjaris, the servant most intimate serving maids of Radharani herself. They come as sannyasis to teach us how to perform bhakti yoga in Kali Yuga. So they know everything about the pastimes. They're part of the whole scene. They know everything. Rupa Goswami doesn't have to ask somebody else. He doesn't have to read other books. When he writes Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu or Vidagdha Madhava or Ujjvala Neelamani, which is the sequel to Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he doesn't have to ask somebody else about it. He's from the transcendental camp of the highest stratum of ecstatic love of God, Goloka Vrindavan. And this is our Vaishnava heritage, to ignore these great literatures, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Bhagat, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. We're missing out on our life and soul. If you intend to take a vacation to Germany, then you get a travel book and you read about it, and you might, if you're fired up, you learn some of the language. You want to know because you're going there for a summer vacation. So what to speak of a summer vacation? Our destination for the rest of eternity. At least this is our aspiration. Our aspiration is to go to Goloka Vrindavan for the rest of entire rest of existence and enter into the pastime. So we should want to know everything, every little detail. For example, Krishna has at least three kinds of flutes. They have different names: Venu, Murli, and Vanshi. A name of Krishna is Vanshi Dar or Murli Dar. Dar means to hold, so Murli Dar means holder of the flute. These are different kinds of flutes. There's a whole analysis given in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu of Krishna's transcendental flutes, different numbers of holes and different lengths. It's a great science, a technical science. Far from speculating on which instrument Krishna plays, the Vaishnavacharyas know in infinite detail exactly how Krishna plays and what he plays, and how he enchants the hearts of all his devotees by playing these different kinds of flutes. How he mesmerizes. Everyone becomes totally enchanted and mesmerized when Krishna plays his flute. Chapter 21 of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Chapter 21 is entitled "The Gopis Enchanted by the Flute." So as soon as Krishna, this can be in the middle of the day, Krishna's out herding the cows, and he starts playing the flute, everyone becomes enchanted, everyone becomes mesmerized. Govardhan Hill begins to melt. The river Jamuna stops flowing. The natural order of everything is reversed. Those things which naturally move, like the river Jamuna, freezes in ecstasy. And those things which are naturally stationary begin to move, like Govardhan Hill, or the trees, transcendental trees of Sri Vrindavan Dham. It's just like everything is saturated with ecstasy. That's the word Prabhupada uses, saturated with ecstasy. And there's simply nothing in the mundane world that is saturated with ecstasy. So this is by hearing these topics, our hearts are becoming cleansed and we're becoming attracted. This is the goal. We want to go there. We want to be there in Goloka Vrindavan. So the services given by the spiritual master are intended to purify us and gradually bring us to the stage of being qualified to enter into that eternal dham. And a service like book distribution, conducted under conditions that are uncomfortable for mind and body, help you to advance. They help you greatly to advance. There was a book published in the early 90s. It's called The Nectar of Book Distribution. It's a red book. It has a red cover. It was published by the North European BBT at a time when American book distribution had dropped practically to zero, and they wanted to encourage the rest of the world. Europe alone, India hadn't yet kicked in. India is now four times as big as the American distribution. So India is really rolling and rocking for book distribution. The individual, there's a World Sankirtan newsletter, the individual distributors, like there's a Bhakta Rakesh who does huge, they do like huge numbers of Bhagavad Gitas. It's incredible. They even do more than Parameshvara and Madhukari. Actually, they do about 8 to 10 times more because they use special tricks like selling to factories, going to the manager of the factory and making a deal with him and getting all the workers to buy Bhagavad Gitas. So they're very brilliant. They have amazing techniques. But India in the 90s had not yet ascended to its current dominance in the field of book distribution. So the North European BBT and the book distributors of Europe, Germany especially, were the topmost distributors. Fortunately, I was there in Europe at the time and I associated with them and I understand German fluently, so I went out on book distribution with them. And the most amazing thing is they would just go to an ordinary street. They wouldn't even go to special events. They would just go on an ordinary street, and I saw with my own eyes they could do 60 big books like Bhagavatams and Gitas per hour. 60 per hour on an ordinary street corner. Try that sometime. 60 an hour. So this one, the best of them, was named Harinam Ananda, and he would just read Bhagavatam 6 hours. From 9 a.m. after the morning program, he would just read till 3. He wouldn't go out till 3 p.m. He would supercharge his consciousness with hearing, as we're saying, Shrinvata Svakata Krishna. He would read for 6 hours, and then in the evening he'd read another 4 hours of Bhagavatam. He read literally 10 hours a day, Srimad Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita. He was a walking Bhagavatam when he got out in the streets. He just had so much shakti, so much bhakti shakti. The people, initially, everyone he approached said, no, I'm not interested, sorry. Ich habe keine Interesse dafür. Sorry, no interest, go home. But he just, as soon as his eyes locked in with their, I saw his eyes, they actually had a magnetic power to them. His eyes would lovingly lock onto their eyes, and he would just mesmerize them with bhakti, and they would just, each one would walk away with 5 or 6 books. He'd spend 5 minutes with each person, so to do one big book per minute, you have to sell 5 books to each person. Each person walked away with 5 big books. Gave a good donation, like $50 or $60. And the end of all that, he would say, "And I'm a monk, can you give something for me? Because I'm a monk." And he was so pure, you can get away with that. They would then throw in another 10 bucks. So each person would give $60 or $70. And he would just go on, 12 of those per hour, 12 persons like that per hour. He would walk away with thousands of dollars every day. And he would stay out for 3 hours a day normally and do about 180 to 200 big books every day. 3 hours. But when marathon time came rolling around, like Christmas marathon, he would go out 12 hours a day. So it's 60 per hour, 12 hours, at 720. And his record is 904. In one day, big books. He wouldn't even look at little books. 904 big books. He holds the world record. And the book, this Nectar of Sankirtan, it's a very inspiring book, this red book. It's in English. And it describes the exploits of these glorious book distributors. And the day he did 904, he writes about his experience. In the very beginning, everyone was nasty and mean. Everyone was ornery and mean. He went to this little village, only had 10,000 people in Switzerland. Against all odds, he went to the most unlikely place, a small village in the Alps, and the snow was 3 feet high. It was freezing cold. It was in the winter. It's Christmas marathon. It's like here, or even colder. The first hour, no one took a book. But he was constantly approaching people, and he said, "This is the test." He told the devotees in a lecture, he explained, "This is how Krishna will test your sincerity." See, this is how you transcend the mind and body. That was the point. The point of the class today is if you want to transcend mind and body, you have to put yourself in a situation where mind and body are not comfortable. If you're always in the zone of comfort for mind and body, you'll never get out of it. You'll never realize that you're not the mind and body. You'll stay in that consciousness. Or it'll take much longer, I should say. The activities of sadhana bhakti are powerful enough. It just takes longer to transcend. So the first hour, many people would give up. Actually, no one took a single book. And he was constantly approaching people. And he's very good, I mean, to put it mildly. For him to go for an hour and no one take a book is a greatly anomalous situation. Everyone knows the word anomaly? Anomalous. It's unprecedented. It doesn't happen. But he understood, because he's so in tune with Krishna's desire. This is Krishna's testing me. Actually, later on is to display it to the rest of the devotees, to explain how Krishna operates. He knows very well what was going on, so he just kept going. He was prepared to work the entire day without distributing a single book. This is the glories of an advanced devotee. He's not dependent on the results. It's not that he was attached to results, and when Krishna gave no results, he would give up the service. That's a misunderstanding of Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita explains very clearly one should perform one's duty without attachment to result. So he was just going on. He was just approaching people, distributing the books. Even after a full hour, then even longer, an hour and a half, no one had taken a book. And he was just going on. Just, this is my service to my Guru Maharaj. I'm not going to stop. It doesn't matter what happens. People were saying, collecting for the big guru, huh? Why don't you get a job? You're so stupid. The guru's enjoying in India and you're working hard like an ass just for the guru. You know, they really nasty people, one after another. So he could understand this is a test from Krishna. And then all of a sudden, this is recorded in this book, The Nectar of Sankirtan. All of a sudden the energy shifted and everyone was buying a book. Because he passed the test. He's describing bearded mountaineers who come down once every 10 years from the Alps. I don't know how they even had any money. Housewives were buying sets of... Then he would also sell full sets of Srimad Bhagavatams on the street. When things really got rolling, he always carried a few sets, full sets in the van. He would literally empty a van. If you do 900 books, the van is full at the beginning of the day, and when you come home, it's entirely empty. There was one brahmachari, his entire service was to make up the shtapal. Shtapal is a stack. He would always approach people with a stack of 15 books, no less than 15 books of various sorts in his hand. All the Germans did that. They just could carry the shtapal, that means a stack. And the devotee in the van was working as fast as he could just to make up the stack. Because 15 books would be gone in 15 minutes, so he would have to make up the stacks and have the bhag. He even carried a set of Chaitanya Charitamrita he would sell to the nicest person. The nicest person got a full set of Chaitanya Charitamrita and a full set of Bhagavatam in addition to the standard 5 books that he would sell. So he just kept on going. This is the point. You have to persist. You have to keep on going in your service. You cannot give up too easily. When the going gets tough, the tough get going. When the going gets tough, the tough get going. Because there will be, Krishna will arrange difficulties. In another purport in the first canto, Prabhupada says, Krishna is more clever than any devotee, and Krishna wants to see how sincere you are in overcoming difficulties in your service. There's another famous purport in the first canto. So the difficulties are arranged by none other than the Supreme Lord Himself to test our determination, our desire. We have to demonstrate. Actually, Krishna already knows. He doesn't need to test. The test is for us. Will we... And Krishna's rooting for us. Come on, you can do it. This is, you know, because this is how you advance. This is how we get out of the bodily and mental concept of life, is by taking on these austerities and devotional service. So there was another great devotee. He was the temple president of Vienna, Austria, and his name is Chakshu, and his story is also described there. One day he was distributing and no one was taking a book at all, and he was again, you have to keep, in that condition you have to persist, you have to keep going. It's very difficult, as you must know, if no one's taking a book, it's very difficult on your consciousness. You know, no one is taking a book, you're going on just trying to distribute. So this devotee's name is Chakshu. And no one was taking a book, and he was just praying to the Super Soul. He kept on praying and praying, and one person came up, and Chakshu said, "You should take this book because today is your birthday." And the guy said, "How did you know?" Chakshu was surprised when the words came out of his mouth. The Super Soul made him say that. The Super Soul was reciprocating. This is actually recorded in this book, The Nectar of Sankirtan. The Super Soul reciprocated with him. Because he was so desirous of pleasing Krishna, Krishna within the heart, within Chakshu's heart, informed him of something that he could not have known by ordinary means of communication. He knew that it was that person's... And then the person became fascinated. "How did you know it was my birthday?" And Chakshu said, "Well, it's all in the books. It describes exactly how to develop higher intuition and higher knowledge and a connection with God. And this one's about yoga and that one's..." And so we wound up selling them a whole set of books. And then he became enlivened, and then the energies shifted. Then from then on he was able to distribute. He had to go for an hour or two with not selling any book. That seems like a whole yuga when you're out there approaching people. It really feels like a yugaitam nimishena chakshusha pravrishayitam. So we have to persist. This is how we will get the mercy of the Lord. So thank you very much. Are there any questions? We want to advance in our service. We want our service to become more pleasing to Krishna. So that means we have to begin considering what is pleasing to Krishna instead of what is pleasing to our mind and body. The Kanishta calculation is what is good for, comfortable for my body and mind. And the Madhyama calculation of a Madhyama Adhikari is how can I purify my heart? I want to get purified. I can't tolerate being impure. So Madhyama calculation is drastically different from the Kanishta calculation. The Madhyama Adhikari wants to, he jubilantly takes on austerities, like Parameshwara is a very good example, or Madhukari. These book distributors for RVC, they're an excellent example of jubilantly embracing the process of purification. Instead of avoiding the process, instead of avoiding the temple commander, trying to figure out which part of the temple I can hide, in which I can hide to avoid seva. That's the Kanishta calculation. And the Madhyama is let me take on more service. And the Uttama Adhikari is floating in ecstasy and sees everyone else is more advanced, so there's no need to preach. The Uttama Adhikari has to come down to the Madhyama platform to be effective as a preacher, because the Uttama Adhikari thinks everyone knows more than I do. They should preach to me. I'm the neophyte in the ashram. So with that divine comprehension, he cannot... Actually, he doesn't even belong in the material world. As I was mentioning, he's like Raghunath Das Goswami or Gorkhasur Das Babaji. They're just absorbed in ecstasy day and night. But because of the mission of the Lord, some of the Uttamas step down, like Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Srila Prabhupada step down to Madhyama platform to perform the activity of spreading Krishna consciousness. The Madhyama distinguishes between four kinds of living entities: the envious, the innocent, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the Vaishnavas, and deals appropriately with each of these four kinds of entities. So and if we're in a Kanishta, we have to struggle to, we have to really try to get up to Madhyama, because a Kanishta is, there's no taste. It's all just trying to avoid service and get as much Mahaprasadam as possible while running away from the temple commander. See how much Mahaprasad we can ingest. How much we can ingest while avoiding while craftily concealing ourselves from the temple commander. But there's no happiness in that state of consciousness. There's always just anxiety and struggle. The Madhyama position, there's great happiness and inspiration in devotional service for a Madhyama Adhikari. He feels always enlivened. He's happy to take on the mission of the spiritual master. He feels in his heart the gratitude and a debt. He wants to repay the spiritual master, which is actually impossible, it says in Shastra. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, it says, if you want to repay the spiritual master, you become a laughing stock. Because what the guru has given is so glorious, it's so exalted, it cannot be repaid. You're getting a ticket to Goloka Vrindavan, a one-way, all-expenses-paid eternal ticket to Goloka Vrindavan. There's no amount of money available to buy the ticket to Goloka Vrindavan. The guru is handing it out in the streets to anyone who will accept the process of sadhana bhakti. So we should try to come up to the Madhyama platform, and then it's tasty. Devotional service is very enlivening. Like Jai Jagannath Prabhu, someone who's on the Madhyama platform, he's happy in all services. He's always enlivened. Everything's tasty. Book distribution, sankirtan, washing the pots, reading the shastra. Actually, a Madhyama has a great taste for reading and hearing the shastras. And he has a great taste for chanting the holy name. He's always fired up and enlivened. So let us then take on the purification process needed to come up to the stage of Madhyama Adhikari. Then we'll be very happy in devotional service. Maya is the best preacher. She works you over until you recognize that the material energy is no fun. Maya's program is to punish you, Prabhupada said in lectures, and especially in this little book, Civilization and Transcendence, the small book that we distribute. It struck me very much when I first read it. Maya's program is to punish you until you surrender to Krishna. Do you like being punished? This is like stark. It's like, this is sambandhagyan. If you have no taste for devotional service, you must analyze. You have to become analytical. If you still think the material world holds anything pleasurable or anything desirable, you have to engage the buddhi. The buddhi has to kick in with sambandhagyan. Otherwise, you're lost. Otherwise, the only thing, then you're headed for a rough ride. Maya is going to punish you, and she is very expert. You cannot escape her punishments. Your body is designed for punishment. Every time you try to enjoy the material energy, Maya punishes you. The more you gratify your senses, the more you suffer. That's how the physical body is set up. That's exactly how it's designed. Krishna is so intelligent, he doesn't have to make us a separate arrangement. He's designed the body. The way it's designed is the more you gratify your senses, the more you suffer. For example, if you eat only sugar and processed carbohydrates, you just eat cakes and sweet rice, then you rapidly run a magnesium and B vitamin deficiency. B vitamins and magnesium are found in green vegetables. So if you go for the most, if you're only concerned with the taste aspect and not with the health aspect, you very soon suffer. It's just design. It's set up infallible. There's a book, Karma, Captain Karma, The Infallible Justice. You cannot escape. So better than you start analyzing. Yes, so you can always take the position that, oh, whatever is sent to me, that's what Krishna wants me to do. If I'm working at McDonald's, it must be Krishna's arrangement. After all, Krishna's the supreme controller. Ishvara Parama Krishna Sachit Ananda Vigraha. He has positioned me in McDonald's because he wants me to work there. Or maybe a less extreme example, I'm a computer scientist, a professional, making $100,000. That must be what Krishna wants me to do. If Krishna wanted me to chant his name, he'd walk off the altar and come to my home and invite me to chant his holy name, right? Obviously, Krishna has unlimited power. Why? Of course he's going to. So obviously, whatever I'm doing is what Krishna wants me to do. That's actually a kind of Mayavadi philosophy, where whatever satisfies me is what Krishna wants. There's actually, what is that? There's a term for that. Yatamat tatapat, Prabhupada would say. Whatever. In other words, human beings are the ultimate, and God is the servant of human beings. God is their servant to provide sense gratification. So whatever pleases human beings must be pleasing to God. The problem with that calculation is we didn't design our physical body. If you were actually in charge, you wouldn't design a body like this. Because I've studied a lot of biology and molecular biology, it's starkly clear that this body is designed for reformation, not enjoyment. It's designed for punishment. If you step out of line, if you're one angstrom out of line, then immediately the long arm, Captain Karma, is there. Because it's just designed that way. So that means we have to analyze. There's so many, like in the fifth canto, there's a chapter coming up, chapter 14, the forest of material enjoyment, where the wife and children are compared to jackals and tigers. I mean, it's a heavy chapter. Of course, not Krishna-conscious wife. Krishna-conscious Matajis are Krishna-conscious. But the materialistic arrangement is coming. It's not my words, it's Srila Vyasadeva. Srila Vyasadeva and Shukadeva Goswami, they're saying that the wife is like a tiger and the children are like jackals, stealing away the hard-earned. The man goes out and works like an ass, and the man is an ass, to top it off, working hard, and then when you come home, all the revenues that you take is stolen away by the kids and wife. Or with Mrigari the hunter, when Narada Muni was preaching to Mrigari the hunter, Narada Muni said, you're going to suffer terrible karmic reactions. And the man, and Raghari said, well, I'm doing it. I have to support my wife and kids. And Narada said, you go home and ask your wife and kids if they'll share the karma for your activities. And then so Raghari, he went home and said to the wife and kids, are you going to, I'm doing all this work to support you, and I'm accumulating terrible karmic reactions. And the wife and kids said, no, you take the karma. We'll enjoy. So he thought, what is this? Time to take vanaprast. Maybe it was not Megari, maybe it was another hunter. Maybe Valmiki. And this this is a Puranic pastime. So in other words, if you still think the material world is the right place to be at, or if you're so much in illusion you think Krishna wants you to be in the material world, then you have to start studying and learning and analyzing. See, if the brain isn't working, if we're not conscious, it's going to be hard to become Krishna conscious. If we're not even conscious at all of what the realities of existence, how will we become Krishna conscious? It's a mundane prerequisite that without consciousness, there's no Krishna consciousness. If you've turned off all your brain cells and you're wandering through the world as a robot, being kicked in the face left and right by Captain Karma and Mayadevi, how are you going to advance? There, and Prabhupada compares bhakti yoga to buddhi yoga. Buddhi means intelligence. If we have no intelligence, then run to someone else and beg them, please, Prabhu, help me understand. That's what the books are about, to give you intelligence. That's why we study Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Chaitanya Charitamrita is when you're already convinced, then it's for floating in ecstatic love of God. That's Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Bhagavat. But if you still think there's some value in the material, then you have to think about it. And if you don't think, you're just going to be beaten bloody until you do think about it. If you're so unconscious you don't want to think about what you're doing, then you're just going to be kicked and beaten by the material. That's the program. That's the greatest preaching. Maya is the best preacher of all. Everyone who turns down the book distributors and the humble devotees, they encounter the best preacher. And she is brutal. She is ruthless. She's ruthless and brutal. And she's, what's the right term? She never lets up. What? Relentless. That's exactly the word I was looking for. She is relentless. And she's brutal. And she's highly expert. All pure devotees are expert. She's expert at her service. She's not going to stop pounding you and beating you and kicking you until you surrender to Krishna. That's her service. And then actually it's very good because it helps you. You would have stayed much longer gumshoeing around and loitering in the material. So Maya's actually your best friend if you're not very intelligent. And if you're intelligent, then Krishna is your best friend. See, if you read Chaitanya Charitamrita like this, Madhya Lila chapter 13 is Lord Chaitanya dancing at Rathayatra. It's so tasty, it's so nectarian. It's so, compared to the kicks you'll have to endure from the material energy, it's just like total nectar. The internal mood of Rathayatra is the gopis are bringing Krishna back to Sri Vrindavan Dham. And Prabhupada says that Srimati Radharani, she even conquers Krishna. There's a wonderful, since we still have a few microseconds left before the Kala Danda descends, there's some wonderful pastimes. Krishna speaking to Srimati Radharani. My dearest Srimati Radharani, please hear me. I am speaking the truth. I cry day and night simply upon remembering all you inhabitants of Vrindavan. No one knows how unhappy this makes me. Krishna had to leave Vrindavan. He had to kill Kamsa. Kamsa was so powerful, only Krishna could do it. So, and then he had to set up Dvarka. Krishna had to leave, but his heart was always thinking of the residents of Vrindavan. As the residents of Vrindavan were always thinking of Krishna, Krishna was always thinking of them in reciprocal separation. Krishna continued, all the inhabitants of Sri Vrindavan Dham, my mother, father, cowherd boyfriends, and everything else are like my life and soul. And among all the inhabitants of Vrindavan, the gopis are my very life and soul. And among the gopis, you, Srimati Radharani, are the chief. Therefore, you are the very life of my life. Krishna says, Tumi mora jivanera jivana, you are the life of my life. Purport, Srimati Radharani is the center of all Vrindavan's activities. In Vrindavan, Krishna is the instrument of Srimati Radharani. This is very confidential. That even Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the instrument of Srimati Radharani. Therefore, all the inhabitants of Vrindavan still chant, Jai Radhe! From Krishna's own statement given herein, it appears that Radharani is the queen of Vrindavan, and Krishna is simply her decoration. Krishna is known as Madan Mohan, the enchanter of Cupid, but Srimati Radharani is the enchanter of Krishna. Consequently, Srimati Radharani is called Madan Mohan Mohini, the enchanter of the enchanter of Cupid. So this is the confidential psychology of God. There's nothing higher than this. Is the emotional ecstasies of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his pure devotees. The beautiful tasty leelas and pastimes of Sri Vrindavan Dham. So thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki. Thank you.